Aloha, everybody, and welcome to another installment of the Pod Squad. As always, Chad Blair from Honolulu Civil Beat. And today we are discussing homelessness in Honolulu, in particular, a new documentary titled No Room in Paradise. It just premiered on KGMB. In fact, Hawaii News Now is one of the sponsors of the film. And joining me is one of the filmmakers, Anthony Alto. Anthony, welcome.
Aloha. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you for coming in. I just watched the all 90 minutes. It's really quite powerful. But before we get to that, tell me a little bit about your background. I know that you are the chair of the Sierra Club here on Oahu, but you also have, a journalism background.
Right. No, the Sierra Club stuff is volunteer and unpaid. I was a newspaper journalist for more than 25 years. I started out as the correspondent for The Guardian in Central America when those wars were going on in Nicaragua, El Salvador, Guatemala, that kind of thing. Worked for the BBC World Service, The Economist, various other publications. And I moved to New York. Was based at the United Nations as a sort of a roving foreign correspondent for many years, I basically reported from more than two dozen countries, Africa, Asia, you name it. Typically would fly into hotspots. So I would, for example, go into report on the fall of Suharto or...
Indonesia.
In Indonesia, yeah. Or go to West Africa to report on the fighting in Liberia, that kind of thing.
My gosh.
But my wife is Japanese-American, born and raised in Chicago, and she came here on a business trip when she was very young, in her early 20s, and said it was the first time she'd really felt at home in America, because everybody was like her. They looked Asian and talked American, and so she fell in love with the place, and I fell in love with her, and that's how I ended up here.
Well, tell me, how on earth did you get involved in filmmaking, and why did you choose the topic of homelessness, an issue that has been covered a great deal? But I will say that I think this documentary really revealed something new for me, and we'll talk about that more. But what led you to this project?
Well, filmmaking, because the newspaper industry walked away from me. My last job in the newspaper business was as a Pacific Rim correspondent for a paper in Europe that, when the Great Recession happened, they had to slash their foreign staff. So I had to find something else, and I decided to try filmmaking, and I was lucky that I was able to make it work. The last documentary we made was about the decision by the Sierra Club to support the HART Rail project. And Hawaii News Now liked it enough that they decided to broadcast it. They gave it a series of broadcasts, I think four or five broadcasts, commercial-free, in prime time. And after that, they came to us and asked us if we would do a film on homelessness. And I think they did it because they understood that although their very heavy coverage had raised awareness about the issue of homelessness, it hadn't necessarily changed how the public at large felt about it. On the contrary, it got to the point where a lot of people would see another two-minute news clip on the evening news and think, oh, God, not again. Mm. And, you know, there is a lot of frustration out there on this topic. I imagine there may be people listening to this podcast who will say, oh, God, not homelessness again. So Rick Blangiardi, who's the general manager of Hawaii News Now, asked us to make a documentary. Originally, what he asked us to do was to light a fire under the politicians, because he felt that there was something that they were missing, something they didn't understand. He said, you know, go and do a kind of 60 minutes expose. And we looked into it, and there wasn't any there. Our politicians, our elected officials, know what needs to be done.
They're quite proactive, I'd
say. They are proactive. They're trying to do what they can. They could do more, but I think the reason they're not doing more is not because they don't want to or they don't get it. I think it's because more requires spending more money, devoting more resources, and I think they feel that they need the community to be on their side. In my mind, the biggest problem is political will. I mean, I can give you a very specific example. If the governor and the mayor were to come out tomorrow and say, we're going to borrow $2.2 billion to build affordable housing, I think people would go nuts. We can't afford this. This state is already bankrupt. I mean, you see the comments in the Star Advertiser.
Oh, they're on our stories as well whenever we report on homelessness.
This is you know, a democratic state. You freaking liberals. you spend money like water. It's not your money. What's going to happen to our taxes? The reality is that we wouldn't be spending any more than we are now. Our taxes wouldn't go up anymore. But that number 2.2 billion is a scary number. So how do we get to a position where we can do that and in effect double, more than double the amount of affordable rentals that we're building without spending more money or raising more taxes? In my opinion, you need the community behind you.
And in fact, that's the whole purpose in many ways of No Room in Paradise, is to get the community to change their attitude. And if we could, let me just play a short clip from No Room in Paradise, so we have a sense of what it's being offered. Of course, this is audio, not video. We'll talk about where you can see it later. But let's go ahead and play that now.
Dear Lord, can we have a break now? Can you allow us to stay here as long as it takes to figure out our next move?
The cops told Nancy and Stephanie the canal was now permanently off limits. With nowhere else to go, they called and asked if they could move into the IHS shelter.
When you pull these sweeps, it's just exhausting. You know, just thinking about where we're going to do, what are our next steps.
And I only decided to go in because Nancy's going in.
What?
I feel like my place is with these kids.
If CBS didn't come back at me and tell me that I could get... I'm at risk of getting my kids pulled from me. I still live on the canal.
You know, I found family after we weeded out the bad people in that area. It was mellow and it was good. And
they even made friends, you know, and my kids were never able to do that anywhere else.
I felt home. For the first time in my life, I felt like that was my home.
It scares me because I don't know how they're going to adjust to the shelter.
And now we're just getting pulled all kind of directions.
You know, the thing that it did for me, this video, is it put a voice to the homeless people that I see on the streets. And when you have a mother and her kids living on Kapalama Canal, and then you actually see them being evicted, and then you see them moving into IHS, and then you see them moving out of IHS, Institute for Human Services, and going somewhere else, and then you hear the kids go, "Where do I go to the bathroom, Mommy?" Boy, that just puts a whole... They're human. And that's, I think, is what's missing for so many people, because you have another quote in there from your narrator saying, "Lazy, smelly moochers. It's a freak show." How do you get people to care?
Well, thank you, Chad, because you have hit the nail on the head. That is exactly what we were trying to do. We were trying to get people to see the homeless as human beings. And it's not, in my opinion, it's not that people are hard-hearted and they all hate the homeless. I think it's just that they don't know them. I think what they see of the chronically homeless on the streets tends to be their tents, their shanties, and the garbage that accumulates around them. And so they see that garbage and they kind of assume that the people who live like that must be human garbage. Mm. And by thinking of them that way, it then becomes a lot easier to come out with these sort of hard-hearted responses, which are, you know, sweep them out to Sand Island, send them back to the mainland. And somehow or other, we wanted to cut through that. And the only way we could think of doing it was to spend time with the chronically homeless and let them speak for themselves.
Two more things I want to bring up about the film, and then you can tell us hopefully where we can see it, future showings. I really enjoyed the part about Waianae, because our own Jessica Terrell actually went out and lived in Waianae and wrote a wonderful award-winning series. The harbor is what we called it. But one of the points that came from that is, you know, tent cities are not a bad idea. They can work. They can be self-regulating. Might that be another part of the solution? Because there has tended to be we don't want to go that approach.
So we don't come straight out and say it in the film, but clearly we do have some sympathy with that position. Funnily enough, Jessica and we started our work
You ran into each other.
Well, we
actually started
on the very first day where the sort of unelected mayor of the boat harbor, Twinkleborg, invited us to both come along and attend one of her monthly meetings and introduce ourselves to the community. And, you know, I made a little joke about Jessica went first, so I went up second. I said, "I'm the other Howley," and everybody laughed, which was good because you want to find a way to try and break the ice a little bit. And it is a community that's overwhelmingly Native Hawaiian.
Yeah. Yeah.
But very welcoming to us. It's a community that works to some extent. There's stability there. Twinks makes sure that all of the kids there go to school. In fact, she does a lot of work to try and get the families. She doesn't think families should be there at all.
She's the unofficial mayor.
Right. And she does her best to get families out of there and into housing. And she actually is one of the forces that gets people off the street. So, I mean, that's good. What's bad about it, about the camp, perhaps bad is the wrong word, but the vast majority of the people who live there are addicted to ice. And they're stable. A lot of them have jobs. In fact, if you go there early in the morning, you'll see people, you know, construction site managers coming looking for laborers because they know that if you're high on ice, you've got like gasoline in your system.
You'll
work really hard. So it's ironic. You would think of addicts as being lazy layabouts. On the contrary, some of these guys, you know, work their backsides off.
They do.
But it's not a good idea to be addicted to ice for many, many years. But is a tent city better than the situation where we have people, you know, in Kakaako defecating into buckets and dumping the buckets down the storm drains and that kind of thing? Situation where the kids, I know kids in Kakaako who are basically, they become like a gang. They don't go to school. That's not a good situation. A regulated tent city is a step better than that. And that there should be, as part of a global solution that is only part of a process of navigating these people into housing. And we didn't meet anybody who wanted to be homeless. I mean, that's another myth that's out there. As part of a process of navigating people into permanent housing, yes, I would say, why not go for another tent city somewhere?
Okay. The final thing, and just briefly, you also talk about Micronesian and the situation with the Compact of Free Association, which allows Micronesians to come here, something we have reported on extensively at Civil Beat. I was surprised to hear one of the homeless, the woman who was homeless from Micronesia, talk about how nobody really understands why they come here, the circumstances, the nuclear testing and so forth. And yet that story ultimately has a happy ending where she ends up getting housing, and she even works, if I remember correctly, too.
Yes. The problem with the Micronesians is that they don't have education, and many of them don't speak very good English, and they
Correct.
Don't have good job skills. So what do they end up doing? They end up doing the lowest paid jobs in our society. Mm-hmm. They all of the people that we talked to had jobs, if not the women, then the men, but in many cases, both of them. How much are they getting paid? Not one of them was being paid more than $10 an hour.
You can't live on $10.
You can't live on that kind of money. So there are two ways of dealing with the homeless problem. One is what I would call a granular approach. There are certain details that I think come out in the film, even though we don't want to hit people over the head with the details, but it's fairly clear that we don't have enough detox and rehab beds for people who have drug addiction, for example. It's fairly clear that we don't have enough treatment facilities for people who have severe mental illness. That's, if you like, granular stuff. And then there's stuff which is more global, if you like, and in fact more national. One of those is we need to raise the minimum wage.
Yeah.
You can't live in this state on $10 an hour.
I know, and it is going up, but it's nowhere near. Other states are moving to $15.
It should be $15 today.
Yeah.
This is Hawaii.
Yeah.
It's one of the most expensive states in the nation. Everybody knows it. We've got to deal with it. Personally, I believe in trade unions. I think the middle class in this country was built by trade unions. I know that there are trade union movement in this country hasn't always been very good at adapting to change. And so in some cases, they become conservative forces. But nevertheless, in terms of negotiating in order to achieve better financial stability for workers, they built the middle class in this country. Trade unions have been eroded for decades. I would like to see more people being able to put combine forces in order to work to improve the amount of money they're making.
Okay. Anthony Alto, a filmmaker, No Room in Paradise is the name of the documentary, 90 minutes, quite a good film on homelessness in Honolulu. Anthony, where can we see No Room in Paradise?
Saturday, November the 5th at 8:30 on KGMB.
Saturday, November the 5th on KGMB.
And Sunday, November the 13th at 8 o'clock on KHNL.
Okay. And in the future, are you hoping to get this at a film festival, maybe the Hawaii International Film Festival or Sundance or anything like that?
Possibly, but our first port of call is actually to we're going to release DVDs and video on demand as soon as the broadcast window is closed. And the reason we feel compelled to do that is two things. One, we're going to charge $15 and it's all going to go to IHS.
Oh, good.
So it's going to be a tax-deductible donation.
Well worth it, I think.
And two, because nearly a million people have watched the trailer and an awful lot of them are on the mainland.
A million people have watched your trailer?
Yep. And most of them are on the mainland, and of course they can't watch KGMB and KHNL, and so they've been asking us, how can we watch it? And so starting November the 14th, they will be able to stream it online, or they'll be able to order the DVD by making a donation to IHS, which is what I hope a lot of people will do. And only then after that will we think about film festivals, because this, you know, the truth of film festivals is that you don't really get distribution deals. What you do is you collect a lot of postcards from other penniless filmmakers.
Take that, Robert Redford. We're going to have to stop there. Anthony, thanks so much for coming on, and good luck with your film, No Room in Paradise. You've got the dates and the information on DVDs. And I also have to say, visit us at civilbeat.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. For the Pod Squad, Chad Blair, Honolulu Civil Beat, take care and aloha.